Ernest Morton, Reel 8. Yes, you were telling me about the audience with the Pope, yes. This incredible yes. meeting, when you gave three hurrahs. Yes. Did you?
No, I didn't find any enthusiasm, and I thought it wasn't the best place to go to say it was the holiness of the Pope, the whole thing in Italy. I mean, the whole thing was holy. Right. Then he gave us a speech in Steve's language, it's not long speech, just saying how glad he was the Pope was coming rapidly to an end, and he blessed everybody, blessed us, and blessed everybody. And then he did something which I didn't know that he had cooperated with the Nazis. I thought, well, I'm no man at the time. But what he did last, yes, in 2 minutes, I had no enthusiasm for him in any call anymore. He came from Sweden and started there's a row of these 10 officers, and the others were behind them. The 40 were not many people, so all very exclusive, you see. I was just chosen because I've been so good, you see. So I was there. And then he spoke this random, out of the 20 officers, he spoke about this 10, right? And then he came to the 40 other lines, and he spoke with one. He went and talked. And then he knew what he was like. And then we exchanged with bodyguards, they all in antique uniforms. We had black markets, we gave them cigarettes, and they gave us little silver medals with the Pope and everything. We exchanged. This was an intimate situation. And then I had a very nice time in Rome, and then eventually we went out, came on further adventures. We went towards the north of it, Rome. And my grandfather, yeah, this was like a tent without a roof, you see, this was very, very small, very precocious. We went from Rome direct to right to the whole of Italy. It was very interesting, actually, because you could see it all the time. I went then to Florence, where the Germans were still there, and were still willing to attend it. It was not quite as full-hearted as usual. A compromise conclusion came between us and the Italians. I just say it ironically because I don't mind seeing what I want to see. The Germans went further out of Florence, which we didn't know. But they had fascists who were still fascists and were still willing to work with them. The fascists they left, armed by the Germans. And we had partisans. They were left armed by us. And we sat on one side of the river, of the Florence. And the Germans were still some on the other side, just more or less as observers to see what was happening, if it's the same. And watch the Italians fighting one another. You see, after a while, I think the Germans called it a halt and took them out, and went further with them to the north, and we went into Florence. And this was our time. It was very interesting, too. After a while,
did you have a greeting like the Rome? No. Did the people come out at all?
Because they were confused. The Italian fighting one another, they didn't know what was happening. I mean, nobody knew what was happening. I only later on could see what had happened. You see, it was all unknown quantity. What was really happening.
It's interesting, Ernest, you were saying that the two sides, you know, the Allies and the Germans, really let the partisans, the Italians, fight it out, as it were, the left and the right. You watched it like a show from the banks.
The Germans had done one thing which was quite nasty. First of all, they wanted to destroy it, you see, because at that time they hated the Italians. You see, because the Italians had wanted out. The Italians were secretly our allies now, you see. And but there were still enough fascists left who were wholehearted supporters, and they had taken Mussolini, who had been on a mountain, and they had taken him out when he was in Milan trying to continue his dictatorship, like a child playing with engines, you see. So, we were now, for me quite interesting, the Germans intended to blow up all the bridges, you see, that, and with great difficulties. It was decided probably by the German or by a civil officer, I don't know what. The only bridge which wasn't touched was had also put these artificial bridges, and it was the same part of it. They were my bridges. They probably came from the poor where I'd be, you see, because we had the biggest set of them. And it was very interesting. They do used it in Germany too, they were, you see. They were very flexible. They could put them together like a poet. So we went into France, and I was in France. This was very interesting too. I was in visited in a beautiful villa, and on the river, of just in the outskirts of Florence. And when I went in there, the room people always prefer us because of our equipment, and of course, me and our headquarters, our radios, you see. And so I went into beautifully furnished, and then into room where the offices of children had lived. They were not there, the owners had gone, you see. I know they were fascists, they might be killed by the Italians who weren't fascists, you see. They were all, everything was a very dicey. But when I went in the room where the child was the first one had been, he left his toys on the table with Mussolini in front, you see, greet us. Yeah, the opposite waiting to those fascists. And the other chaps took them as a souvenir. I couldn't have taken it. I didn't want to touch a precious ornament of any kind, you know. And then we sat there and listened to the Germans speaking, because they were near to the Germans. The Germans couldn't make up their mind how far they would go, whether they should still defend it, or could they, because they were preparing the last line of defense, which was called the Gosset line, and which faced south of Boulogne. And this was a chain of mountains, and mountains are very easy to defend. You see, because people who could kept more soldiers busy than we could have them in Italy. So, but of course, we knew these things, we always knew after it happened, we wouldn't tell us much about the thing. It was uncertain, we could fear they could come anytime back again. So, the area where we were sort of at that time for a few days against the border between the Germans and us, you see. So you never knew what they were up to suddenly and so on. We were on alert. So during the night you could hear tanks, the sound of tanks in the background. And we were within tram distance from the heart of Florence, which was very nice. It was very interesting. And the interesting thing for me was we were billeted in a garden, of a beautiful garden of a nice house. There were people who owned the garden were still living in the house. And they watched us put in the tent up and so on, just to accept it, you see. And there was a young chap, 18, 20, very serious, watching. And I don't know how it came, either I tried to have a kitchen in Italian. I talked to him, and he talked to me, and we couldn't, my time was very limited, but he didn't speak any English, and I found that he spoke German very well, he spoke German, and this was very interesting, very important to me later on. He was a young student, his father had been an architect, and he was he showed Mr. Ozef the medal of his party, obviously. And this boy had joined the resistance, and before he came, and was arrested, and they were just afraid of executing him, and we liberated Germans. And he immediately invited me into the house, you see, into his house, in his room. And very nice, I guess, very tasty, very beautiful, and he took his room. And there, with his books, I'm telling you, there were all the children's books I had in German, and we discussed the book in German. And of course, I was immediately very much at home with him. And it was really, I mean, it was, and he was the first thing to ask to me and so on, but I never told him that I came from Germany. Because again, I didn't know what was happening next. You see, I never told that anybody there, because it was not in Rome either, you see, because you never knew. They may have been only yesterday still on the fascist side, and it could change overnight because of something, you know? So I was very new to. But he didn't know that as an expert. He didn't know that I went to the court, I spoke German, I was educated in English, you see. But all of these things I avoided. But I interviewed him all the time. I interviewed his, in the end, he gave me such an interesting story. I said, Jews, and he was a young, and he was born under fascism, and so on. I said, quite a film, I was interested. And I translated it in English, and all people were very interested in the letters. You see, very simple, but it's very nice.
One of our continental people who were with me on the Anzio was comparatively elderly, I was 35 or something. He's a Hungarian journalist, Jewish journalist. And when he was in Rome, he had to find immediately the people who were in charge of psychological warfare. He'd been a journalist. So they offered him a job, and he was released. They normally never released anybody from us to any other job, because once you were in a unit, like our unit, it was a great honor, and it was anything else, it was still an event. But the course, I think, of the state, he was very nice, very intelligent man. He managed to get out of it. And he then felt guilty that he's out and I was still in. So. And he ordered me and said, "Sicily, I would wish you can visit in Florence, it's another headquarters of the psychology and the bunch. Go there, I've written to them, told them about you, and have a chat with them." So often I was in Leaf. We always had weekend leaves or interviews, because we lived in Florence, outside Florence. So I went there and met, I think, mm-hmm. who it would be, and I met the person in charge, who actually was a sergeant. He was represented the American part of the psychology warfare, the British and the American. And he was the son of Thomas Mann. Thomas Mann at that time was the great German author. Now he's not in the land anymore, so he's at the extent. And his son was a very interesting man, very depressed. You could feel it was a sort of permanent depression. And but he was interesting to me because he was proposed to do propaganda against the Nazis, which he did, but he wasn't really very much in touch with Germans, you see, prisoners or things, and was very interested that I was in the front line. And I told him all the usual things and so on, which told you, and also told you the effect of the Nazi propaganda and on the effect which I thought his leaflet, which I found in the Falkland too, you see, because I was always in the
team. What were these leaflets that you saw?
The leaflets were very clever. They were English ones, the British ones, American ones, whatever they call it. They published a little newspaper, right? A sort of page, 3 pages, 4 pages, where you when you read them in German, you didn't know whether some resistance movement had dropped them, because they were written clearly, so clearly, Germans to Germans, you see, and informing them what was happening. But not as if they were on the enemy line, because this was claimed with German propaganda Germans. It never occurred that I had difficulties to analyze it, and then it dawned on me it must be from us, you see, because of the warehouse, the condition of whether they're all very nicely in good condition, etc. But the Germans, they made a great mistake. They had them shot at us through mortar, which had the effect that they all came in a very bad condition. So I put the bits together and had them together now. For me, only very interested. Our troops weren't interested in it because of the touch. They had only one type of leaflets which interested them. They were pornographic. See? At that time, people were not used to pornography. And it was always the American, while you're fighting here, the American has a lovely time in Britain with your wives. You see? And you saw the wife, so-called wife, and you just putting a socket socket on, and the American putting his tie on. And this is interesting, you see? That's important to see. And then, when we went to Rome, they made a mistake. From the road where we were, they thought the Americans would come. And the American forces were the British. So we got the American propaganda, and the Americans were the British one, where it was told how they were raping the women and we were bombarded with anti-Semitic the Jews are very rich in America. You saw the real Jewish characters who make money while you're fighting here, you see? So they weren't so interested in us. I couldn't keep the anti-Semitic one. I just didn't want them, you see? But the other ones that I got them, I picked up. I was interested, and always in propaganda after seeing Goebbels in action, you see. So there was a very important thing which people had underestimated. And I didn't underestimate it, so it was very important. So I discussed it with Klaus Mann over lunch, who was always a journalist, invited me for lunch, and we discussed it backward and forward. And we discussed
And in the end, he said, you know, I wouldn't like to join you, plus, you know, I thought it was marvelous. I would have left him in Florence, I would have taken a jeep to chauffeur for him, and I would visit German prison of war camps to interview them, whether they had reacted to what they thought about our propaganda, and talk to them, and then could tell them, no, no, that doesn't work, because we must find another solution. Well, I thought it was fantastic. So I get back, and in the meantime, the other six German refugees, they had split enough of it, because they heard from Britain all the people who didn't join the army got marvelous jobs in television, the propaganda, all these things which were very nice, and were high rank immediately, much more money, and we were sitting still in that sort of in the situation which by that time had become still gone out the minute people attacked France, and we knew the war was decided there, we were just the pipeline. Although this was good if you get later on demoted, you get a higher gratitude and money for this, and many advantages. So they had heard all the other things in the north were accepted. In our area, there was no great demand, but they went and tried to get our major, I would listen, and they would like they would be allowed to be transferred to some of these outfits because of this qualification and language and so on. And that was quite interesting too. Our major was very hurt, very hurt. Because for him, the battery was the greatest experience of his life, and he was very good, I told you. And so he said, he spoke very blunt with us, polite but blunt. He said, I understand you, I can feel, yes, I can see your point of view, and I will forward your application. I didn't say anything because I knew Thomas Mann had already made an application. I kept quiet, I didn't say anything. And then, they said, I do that, but if you are not accepted and come back, you will never get any promotion from you. But they decided after 5 minutes huddle that they would still risk it and like to, you know, to see goodbye. And they went. And appeared again 2 weeks later. See? And that was the end, you see. And he was very reserved and cool with them. And
you didn't go there. You didn't.
I never heard anything from them. But I heard later on from the people that they did know during the war. They don't because I'm trained and I'm a very important person in the common, and they couldn't release me. See, because the generals looked down on this. They didn't believe very much in this propaganda. It was a sort of inside fight with one another. So that was the end of that. So now we went on to north of England and participated in the following the Germans, wherever the Germans fought, we fought. And then one day we came to a marketplace called San Lorenzo. It was called Borgo San Lorenzo. I never heard of it again. But when you have a market town, it was outside, and then we fought, we officers, the one who wanted to get a VC, and one of the sergeants and me went into a jeep into the town to find out what happened, because the Germans had suddenly nowhere to be seen anymore. Okay? So we slowly advanced, but were very cautious, you see, because it's too good to be true, there was some snake in the whole thing. And it was a very hot day, it was still the end of the summer, about September, October. And what is very curious about it? It was a town, ordinary town, nothing very special, and it was totally quiet and nobody inside. And we went slowly in, and we came to the conclusion, Germany had evacuated, what made us very, very suspicious that there was no Italian inside. No pet enemy, nothing, just total quietness. And we went with the jeep very, very, very slowly, prepared any minute to be blown up, you see, because the Germans did that very well. It was a well known tactic. So we were quite convinced that it was like this. Couldn't be otherwise. A town in good condition, clean everything, and we went around in there, the minute of nothing. It was sort of uncanny. And this was, I was more than afraid of it. I was petrified, you see, because you were sure it was just a matter of seconds
where the whole thing becomes an end. And then doing that, the others had the same. They didn't say much to one another, but all of them had the same idea. And the one that was very fanatic to get further, but, it was usually a bit of daredevil, see? But he found here, you know, won't be caught here in this. But after a while, he said, what do you think about it? Your person. He couldn't find an answer. So he said, here's, he let them know it's clear. If you get another thing, see? As I mentioned, all the troops come in and blow the pieces, you see, because maybe somebody had suddenly pressed the button. And he went out again, and he bypassed for a while, did further, and then evening, we were told this was our headquarters. You see, we came back, and there was a, from the minute we were there at lunchtime, it was a normal place full of people, full of traffic. It was a dream, you see, as if you'd never experienced it. You couldn't. Really, it was difficult to recapitulate it, you see. But it was, that was the most frightening experience I've ever had in my life, you see. It was really incredible. You know, it's just had one huge question mark on your head, you see. What is that? What is going on here? And then we went on and on and on. And then we became colder and awful, and the weather was pouring down, and they all did boats collapsed under the weight of the armored vehicles of the lorries because they were built for this. You see, the mud was like going up to the ceiling. You could, when you went out, you were practically up in mud. And then we went again into No Man's Land. And in No Man's Land, this was a very different No Man's Land because on the mountain.
This would be near the Gothic line, would it?
But the Gothic line was there. And we were on the mountain in a green old towers. There was a church, the whole church was half destroyed, and there was the house where the clergyman had lived, you see, which was still in reasonable condition. So we decided to stay in this building. We didn't go on, and then the Germans did something which was equally awful. They must have known we were there, I don't know why. And we were in this house, okay, we had a boat, and they started bombarding us with artillery. And here for the house, right? And the shells exploded here, 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 but never hit the house. And I think it wasn't under that one, it was just one of those things. You see, for some reason, it was everything was supposed to be there. And there again, we said, and we're sure any moment we would be hit. It would have been out there. So, one of these things would have torn everything to pieces. But it was another very unpleasant thing. It was the last big unpleasant experience I had in this. And then after two years, we still had communication, and then we were, it was always a custom, after a while, we were sworn. And then the other thing, but it was important. And then we were cleared suddenly, we were sworn. So, mm-hmm.
Well, were the conditions very bad where you were, you know, in terms of mud and getting bogged down?
It was like the First World War. It was absolutely, you were really sunk in the mud. It was just, yes, I mean, you could have stirred them. It's one of the person. It was incredible how it was open. And all the trees were destroyed. It looked exactly like in the First World War, the pictures we had seen. It was like a replica of this, you see. For my, I'd been really shot to pieces, the scenery from both sides, you see. And then, the last thing before we got finally out of it was, I became aware that something had gone out of the road of the infantry of the Germans. This was after the 20th of July. It was towards the coming slowly towards the end of 1945 already.
And end of 44.
End of 44, but then when we moved out of the area, was January 1945, right? And there I felt that it was a sort of overspore, really, you see? And I found out later that after the 20th of July, when they tried to assassinate Hitler, and they all quite a number of generals and officers participated, Hitler never trusted the Germans anymore. And the SS became the elite. And one of the adjutants of Himmler was chosen to take the command of all the troops in Italy instead of another general. And what happened that I thought afterwards? This chap was contacted by British intelligence. They met in Switzerland and
he was a fanatic Nazi, the Czech philosopher, responsible for the upshot of the Holocaust, right? And they told him, the Muslims, if you behave nicely, I invented words, I wasn't there, but we offer you the pardon. You know it, you know the record, you know the record. But if necessary, you can live in Switzerland. And they did. And you know, 2 months before the war ended, the German army capitulated to the Allies. After sworn he would fight to the last. Good.
What was his name?
That's a very good idea. And then it comes back in the minutes where I can't just remember his name. Wolf. Wolf was name.
Wolf.
Wolf. Right? Wolf.
General Wolf. Was it General SS?
Yes, I think it was that I must have been the friend of General SS.
So you had the feeling then, did you, when you were in the Gothic line, yes, that it was not the fact that you were shelled around? Yes.
You see, I was very, very puzzled, you see, about quite some very symptoms didn't make sense. You see, I didn't see it to anybody, else. I just didn't know it. And the general staff, of course, knew already, I didn't know. That's why we felt we were wasted there, you see, we were elite, you see. Where we go now, Burma is still a lot of trouble. These guys are with the Burma, you see. And in the meantime, because they don't know jungle warfare, we let them detain them in Palestine. It's probably in Palestine. And they, after the war, I don't know whether it's of interest, I guess, or from television, and who was interviewed on ITV for the story of the war, but very good for theaters of when the last war. And suddenly, General Wolf appeared in civil clothes. And that was it. By that time, I knew what had happened. And you wouldn't have believed it. A man, very good looking, about his 40s, very elegantly dressed, very sophisticated, and you would never, never, never believe that he was Hitler's adjutant. And that is just what happened with him. He was, in Switzerland for a while. Then he thought it was safe. He went back to Germany. He was not put on trial by the Allies. But the Germans put him on trial. And they didn't think really that it was a short trial. It was just a sort of gesture that we are against the Nazis. And he got 2 years prison and then got out of it. And then lived in Germany happily ever after, a very rich man. And appeared on television and played a lot of very talks very ironically about him. He had never been anything.